Hello there, Podcast Land. This episode of the Behind the Barricade podcast is sponsored by Podcast Texts. Podcasters, do you want to expand your podcast reach to 360 million, maybe even more people? Do you want to make your podcast searchable on Google, Yahoo, even Ask Jeeves? Then look no further than Podcast Texts. You can increase your podcast reach exponentially. You can also reach the deaf and hearing impaired. They can read your podcast. It's unbelievable the amount of ways Podcast Text can help you. Maybe you have a few links you'd like to include. Not a problem. You can include them thanks to Podcast Texts. Seem too good to be true? Visit PodcastTexts.com to create a more dynamic user experience for your audience today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Behind the Barricade podcast, and here are your hosts, John O'Connor and Daniel Tao.
What is going on, Podcast Land? Episode number 63 of the Behind the Barricade podcast starts right now. I am your host, John O'Connor. Like always, I'm with Daniel Tao. And like I said, we've reached episode number 63 of this thing we call the podcast. Today, Dan and the very beautiful Sarah talk with New Jersey local band Seas of Wake. They opened up for the Fury Tour featuring BTB alumnus Woven War and Darkness Divided, also Soilwork, Unearth, and Battlecross over at the Stanhope House in wonderful Stanhope, New Jersey. They talk about a wide range of topics, and I'm going to keep it at that because who likes spoilers? Not I. Not you listening out there. But anyways, before we go into the episode, just want to thank you all for liking us on Facebook, following us on Twitter, following us on Instagram. We're going to start up with Snapchat, which I still don't know exactly what a Snapchat is, but we'll figure it out. Don't you worry, Podcast Land. We will figure this out. And anyways, on the podcast side of things, thank you so much for subscribing, for telling a friend about us, for rating and reviewing us on iTunes. Apparently, it works in their algorithm, and it gains us more views and listens and helps with our popularity on iTunes. So please keep doing what you're doing. You're awesome. Thank you so much. And that's about it on our end. But anyways, here's number 63 of the podcast, where we have Seas of Wake with Dan and Sarah. Go.
Here with Seas of Wake at Stanhope House. What's going on, guys?
How you doing, man?
So, home show, local show, Stanhope House.
Yep.
You ever played here before?
Yeah. I got to say, this is probably the 10th time we've played here.
10th time.
Yeah. We're quite local to here, so it's a popular spot.
Are these the biggest bands you've played for or here at this venue? Yeah.
Tonight Show?
Yeah.
Or this is a pretty big show in terms of, like, you know, bigger tours and whatnot. I'm trying to think of a bigger tour that we've... Well, you mean specific to Stanhope, right?
Yeah. You played Mayhem?
Yeah, we played Mayhem in 2012. I think it was the year before they shut down, or maybe 2 years before.
So which band? Was that the...
It was Slipknot, actually. Asking Alexandria.
Yeah, I was just going to say. I'm like, was it the Asking Alexandria one?
Yeah, it was a good time.
I don't know. They kind of got off the bands that I particularly listen to. In the beginning, I'm like, oh, great. You know, I got In Flames, Killstreak Engage, and now you have these bands there, you know?
Well, that's the cool thing about metal, at least what I think the cool thing about metal is there's so many bands nowadays that you can encompass under the genre of metal. You know, you have metal bands like Animals as Leaders and Periphery, and you have metal bands like Killswitch Engage and then Slipknot. There's so many different characteristics of certain bands that you can consider what would be under the umbrella of metal nowadays. It's such a broad and all-encompassing genre.
It's crazy when you get into the, you know, technical, you know, genres. You have melodic metal, death metal, and then you have progressive. You have all this crap, like, and that's rock and that's metal. Like, you have, it's just like a huge web of like different styles.
Yeah, and the thing that I think a lot of people misunderstand about Mayhem and these massive metal tours is that they're still it's a business. You know? So,
well, that's also why they shut down. And
it's, you know, they're going to do what they have to do to get the large audience out.
I mean, not like I don't like Asking Alexandria or bands like that. It's just when you grow up going to Mayhem with these types of bands and then they switch it, you're like, maybe I don't want to go this year, you know?
Yeah, you have a little personal disappointment, but you got to understand that there's other fans out there.
Oh, exactly. That wanna, you know. And hey, if it's going to make metal money, I'm all for it, you know? Exactly. I want metal to be like the dominating, you know, genre.
Exactly. In the entire world.
Well, the cool thing, too, is, you know, I think metal is kind of making a little bit of a comeback into the mainstream. You know, back in the 90s, you had, you know, pop music, R&B, and then slowly, you know, out of the 80s where you had rock stars like, you know, Guns N' Roses, those were the real rock stars of, you know, what you would consider metal, but, you know, alternative rock, heavy rock. And then as we get into the 2000s, you start to get rappers are actually what you hear people calling rappers the new rock stars of music. So I think it's kind of cool that I'm starting to see a lot more metal bands come to the forefront of what I would consider almost like a metal revival. Especially in New Jersey, you know, there's a lot of acts, Toothgrinder, Dillinger Escape Plan. Even if you go back into the 2000s, My Chemical Romance, when they came out of New Jersey, I wouldn't really consider it a hotbed, but it is cool seeing, you know, big names getting out of there from the state.
So I want to ask you a question about Mayhem. What was it like playing that?
That was phenomenal. I mean, we had fortunately won a battle of the bands to get onto that. Which
that's
is
what
awesome,
I wanted to know.
You know, awesome response from our fans that came out to, you know, give us the win, and we go out there and it was one of those days of the summer that was brutally hot, and we got there really early, like 11, 12 o'clock was like peak hotness, so we got like all kind of cold water and whatnot, and so aside from it being like incredibly hot on stage and sweating and whatnot,
did you play all of them? All the Mayhem shows?
It was just one date.
We played the one date.
It was up in New England, right?
It was Camden, New Jersey.
It was Camden.
Yeah. So we, yes, the battle that we had won landed us on that one specific show. Mm-hmm. It was an incredible time.
Okay, so in case anybody wants to stalk you, where do you guys live in Jersey?
I'm in Jefferson Township.
Oh, all right, so you're real close.
So I live actually 5 minutes down the road. I live over in Mount Arlington, Roxbury Township.
Okay.
And then a couple of our other members, we have Anthony, our guitarist. He lives over in, I believe it's by Bloomfield. I want to say the township is...
Oh, so that's kind of far.
Yeah, it's a little far. It's about a 45-minute drive. And then mm-hmm. our other guitarist Bill and our drummer Rick is they're over in Newton, which is actually a little bit north of here, but
yeah.
We all practice in Rockaway at Backroom Studios.
Yeah, we know where that is.
Yep, owned by Kevin Intrusian, mm-hmm. who's actually playing guitar for Dillinger Escape Plan right now, and it's always a pleasure to work around him and he actually recorded our record as well.
You know, it's funny. I was on YouTube, not YouTube, Facebook. You guys posted the Mortal Kombat video, and I'm sitting there, I'm looking, I'm like, that parking lot looks familiar. Is that back room?
Have you been over there?
Yeah, my one band, Too Far Lost, to record our album with Jonathan.
With John.
Dude,
yeah.
he is awesome. Awesome,
yeah.
Dude.
He's young, too. A lot of people look at him.
Yeah, dude, it's crazy to think. I'm like, I'm sitting here, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's Dillinger Escape Plan's guitar. I just left it here. I'm like, all right, we could record our album with that? Sure, that's nice.
We've actually been lucky enough
to meet them.
To meet them, but we've been lucky enough that we've actually, our practice schedules just so happened to kind of coincide with Dillinger. They were actually there a couple times practicing, and that's always, you know, a really eye-opening experience to watch them practice. practice and watch them do what they do, because it's really an intimate setting. They actually played a show in the live room at Backroom, which
I see they do that a lot.
They do. You know, it's only a capacity of maybe about 50 or 60 people, and you have 100 people crammed into that space. It's really a very intimate experience to see a band like that who goes out on an international
and they're pretty big. Yeah. They've been on Mayhem.
Yeah.
Well, dude, it's funny to think that a band like that is practicing in our home state, in a place that we've obviously been to.
That goes back, though. There's actually, if you were to YouTube Dillinger's Miss Machine album, there's footage on there of, I believe, Greg doing the vocals in the practice space that we practice in at Backroom. So, I mean, that's like their stomping ground there. And Kevin's known Ben for years, and it's one of those things where they just know them forever.
How many nights a week do you guys practice?
Depends on our show scheduling and whatnot. You know, if we have something like this coming up, our drummer is actually on tour filling in for another band right now. So we have a friend of ours filling in for us. And so we've actually been in, I'm the singer, so like I'm not like, I'm like the lead singer disease guy. I've never shown up. But I was there, you know, two or three times in the past 2 weeks. But these guys are just phenomenal. They're in there, what were you guys in there?
5 days a week.
5 days a week in the past, yeah. For the past 2-3 weeks.
Our normal practice schedule, though, like we all have, you know, jobs that we have to really use to fund what we love.
Of course, of course.
Yep. But we normally on a normal week on a week to week basis, we try to be down there at least 2 days a week, at very
awesome.
Minimum.
And are you there the 2 days a week or?
Yeah,
or no?
Yeah, for
you
the most
are,
part, yeah.
You are. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I.
Do you write?
I said what I said. I was like I. This past week was like Monday. We had the show coming up, and it seems like this time of year, of course, everyone starts to get sick. And it just so happens when we have a big show like this, like I had to play a battle of the bands with, you know, vocal issues because of strep or whatever you want to call it. And I also we played a show at Starline Ballroom with All That Remains, and I was sick, and I was like, what the heck is going on?
You
so starting to get sick this week as well, and thankfully I got over it.
It's true, and you know, a lot of times even in Dan's band, the singer will just he'll skip it. You know, you got
to
kind of preserve. I'll never forget
you
saying that sparked the story I'm going to tell you. We went to Starland. I forget who we were going to see. It was probably Killswitch. The singer of this one band actually got up on the microphone. He's like, I have the stomach flu. He's like, if I yak all over you, he's like, I'm truly sorry.
Yeah.
And that's actually when it kind of like just opened my eyes a little bit to how you just need to put up with shit. You got to get out there, and you got to get on stage, and you got to do what you do
you
if that's
do
what
it.
You want to do.
I mean, there's actually a lot of people who, like you said, they will just cancel their show just to save.
Not everybody's Axl Rose, though.
But then there's, like, Adele and I think the singer Papa Roach. Like, they actually get polyps on their vocal cords for pushing their throat, you know?
Yeah.
Like, at the All That Remains show, I ended up doing a half-hour set, 45 minutes or whatever it was, and I did kind of the same thing that singer was. I told the crowd that, listen, like, I'm sick, but half of you are probably sick, too, and you're out here having fun, and everyone went crazy. It was... Yeah, that was a good time as well.
Good looking out.
Yeah,
it's a good attitude.
Yeah, you got to be positive.
And I mean, you know, some vocalists do get a really bad rep for not participating, not contributing, sort of like the prima donna. But I will say that Sean is actually a very good band member.
Yeah.
He does contribute. He does show up. He pays his part. Obviously, if we're practicing 5 days 5 days in a row, we don't expect him to sing all five days in a row.
Exactly. I think you have to, you know, the instruments have to be down more than the vocals, so to speak, you know?
Yeah, I mean.
Do you write, though?
Yeah, I write.
Yeah, I write. In terms of practicing with shows and whatnot, I would say that if you're on a tour schedule where you're going to be playing back-to-back dates, which is very common with a lot of touring musicians, that's when I would be there practicing night after night to get the... Because they say the vocal cords is actually like a muscle. And you have to treat it like the gym, where you're going every day and getting it used to.
You look like you spend a couple days a week in the gym.
Yeah, I mean, I spent this... I sat
we
on stage...
We both do, actually.
This cute guy over here.
We used to be workout partners.
We used to be, and then you got busy with college and...
Is that how you met?
How did we met because of the band?
Well, interesting enough, I used to play guitar. I played guitar for about 15 years. And
in another band or?
By myself, mostly.
Oh, by yourself?
I started when I was about 7 years old playing guitar. You know, stuff like Stevie Ray Vaughan, which was actually playing
most of
the night. Yeah, Stevie Ray Vaughan, you know, Randy Rhoads. I grew up playing that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then my circle of friends that lived around here, we started a band called Humanist. And they were using 7 and 8 string guitars. and I didn't own any of them, but I really wanted to be a part of the local music scene. And luckily enough, I had a 5-string bass lying around, and I had picked it up, and I started to treat it almost kind of like a guitar, but I really wanted to start getting into playing bass.
Mm-hmm.
And I had ended up leaving Humanist for a bunch of different reasons. You know, I was very busy at the time with school. I wasn't sure really where things were going. And like I said, you know, we had actually had a practice room at Backroom, much like Seize Awake did at the time. And I knew Kevin from being at Backroom. And what ended up happening was when I left Humanist, when I had left Humanist, I think Kevin had gotten wind of it, and you know, I had talked to him for a little bit about it, and shortly after, I guess Kevin had gotten in contact with Seize Awake and with Sean, who were at the time looking for a bassist,
okay,
and had passed my name along, and that was when Sean got involved, and he had hit me up on Facebook. And shortly after, I came in for a couple practice runs, trying to learn some songs. And from there, we kind of got the ball rolling.
And the rest is history.
Yes.
The
rest is history. Now we're here.
How many times have you guys been on tour?
We did a small, we haven't unfortunately done like an actual nationwide tour or anything like that, but we did a small East Coast. We've done a couple small East Coast tours.
Okay.
Down to Connecticut, Delaware, up in New York, up New York State and whatnot.
So who are you leaving behind when you go on tour?
What do you mean?
Like, you have families,
yeah,
significant
yeah.
Others.
I got my two brothers, their kids. I have two little nieces, my dad. Mm-hmm. What about you?
I have my girlfriend. I have my mother, who's actually, she had a brain tumor when I was a little bit younger. So she's actually in a home in Pennsylvania. So I try to see her as when I can. But, you know, like when we go on tour, when we're unfortunate, it's unfortunate when, like, you know, when we're not around. Those are the kind of things that I don't want to say that it's unfortunate for us. You know, if we go out on tour and do what we love, we're having an absolute blast. But I think the trade-off really is just like anybody would, you know, go to work and have to deal with certain circumstances like that. I think really the trade-off to doing what you love in this specific circumstance is that unfortunately you have to leave a couple people behind.
Yeah.
And for me, it's my mother and my grandparents.
Yeah.
Everybody's supportive.
Does it help? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just gonna say in the 6 or 7 years that we've been doing this, our families have definitely been supportive. I mean, our one guitarist's mom was out here tonight, and she's like, she comes to a lot of our shows, you know.
That's cool.
Our drummer, again, he's on tour, but like his parents always come out, and it's cool when you can have, you know, 5 guys in a band where all their families are supportive and cousins coming out and family members.
You
come
have
out.
To have that.
Absolutely.
I think if you don't have it, that's
yeah, and
not
that
really
goes, and
go
that's
anywhere.
Not even just coming out to, because some people can't make it to an event. You know, support is also either whether it's sharing stuff on social media, just spreading the word in their local areas.
And, you know, that you still have a girlfriend to come back to, right? When you come back.
Oh, yeah. My girlfriend actually came out tonight. And, I mean, you know, a lot of the times, I wouldn't say we share a great deal of musical interest, but she absolutely supports me in what I do and what I would like to do with my life. And even if it means, you know, paying full price for a ticket just to come out and see us, she does that very
That's
often.
Awesome.
You know, whether
I can't tell you how many times I've done that.
It's a very important, and I mean, I thank her, you know, many times over, because I think a lot of what people don't realize is that good music will take you far, but it'll only take you so far. And bands like, you know, the Dillinger Escape Plan and Tooth Grinder, you know, just to name a couple of recent ones, they don't blow up without people behind them supporting them and people coming out and supporting at this level. This is where it begins. You know
yes.
what I mean? Every band has been here at some point for the mm-hmm. most part. And that's an important thing to realize, is that every band has started somewhere, and without support, without people supporting musicians for doing what they love, then that is what is required to take them to the levels that, you know, bands come and we see them on national tours, that
right.
they started somewhere. And yeah. it's support.
Everybody's
really
got to start at the beginning. So, sorry.
That's right.
That's right. So I see that you guys, obviously you won 4 Battle of Bands. You get featured on Metal Injection, was it?
Yes.
Metal Injection, and there was another one. Another bigger.
It was Revolver.
Revolver. So you got featured on them. You've played on Mayhem. You're playing with these bands. Azalea Dying, you know, Slipknot, now Woven War. So what's the deal with, like, do you guys have any talks with contracts? Do you have any leads on stuff like that? Because, I mean, I've never really seen a New Jersey band that I know that's got that much kind of like publicity. What's the deal with that?
It's, you know what, metal is a very difficult genre to break in terms of, you know, major success. Like, you know, Metallica is obviously out there, but you know, Slipknot, they say Slipknot and Metallica are like the last of the big bands like that. So
I don't know. I think right now it's Disturbed too.
Well, Disturbed.
I mean, they're getting huge.
Would you consider them metal or are they like
Yeah,
rock,
they're like new metal-ish.
Right.
You know.
But I guess my point is that It's hard for a band on a local level because there's a lot of competition in this genre, yeah. And like you guys were discussing earlier, there's it's like a melting pot of different styles of the genre, mm-hmm. So it's really what record labels are looking for and what representatives and agents and whatnot, and we've sent our press kit out and whatnot, and we've gotten responses, we've gotten on the radio and whatnot. It's just a matter of pushing on, keeping going, and.
And I mean, too, there is, you know, like Sean said, a lot of competition, but the music industry itself has been changing. It's been changing for the last, you know, 10, 20 years with the introduction of streaming. Now downloading is a huge part of album sales. Now they're all digital. They're not physical copies of albums are not being sold that often anymore. So I think a lot of that contributes to how not only the music industry on the label side is operating, but on how the music industry on the band side is operating as well. So we have sent our press kit out, you know, like Sean said. We still are looking around. We're trying to hope, but at the same time, I don't think any of us really want to limit ourselves to being only operable if a label comes to us and wants to sign us. We really do want to do as much as we possibly can by ourselves. We've always had that mentality where we want to only operate for us to make the music that we love. And if somebody comes along and says, hey, we really like what you're doing and we want to help you do it and we can work out a contract with them, I think that would be great. But I don't think... We're not putting all of our metaphorical eggs in a basket in that sense.
Would you be happy to stay where you are right now?
I don't think that any of us could really say that we want to be exactly where we are right now in the sense that this is all that we have planned for the band. Mm-hmm. I think I would hope that I could speak for everybody when I say that we're all happy with where we are in the sense that we are proud of the success that has come of what we've done. But at the same time... At the same time, I think we all have a vision of the future that involves us doing as much as we possibly can.
Okay. That's a good way to word it. That was a very presidential answer.
Yeah, he's very
that
presidential.
Was good.
He follows politics a lot.
Mm-hmm. All right, so funny question. Speaking of presidents, which one are you voting for, Donald Trump or Hillary?
You got to do that to us right now, don't you? You're going to
yes.
do that to us?
Or you could do neither. You could do neither.
I'm going to say I'm pleading the fifth. I'm pleading the fifth. I'm not shooting myself in the foot with this one.
All right.
Well, I'll give a little bit more of an elaborate answer than Sean.
You could say who do you prefer. That doesn't mean you're necessarily going to vote for them.
Listen, I think when it comes to this presidential election that it's a rough time in American politics. I don't think that this election has done the American political system any kind of justice. I don't really have a preference in the sense that I'm very upset with the way the political discourse has been happening in this
country.
Who
would it be?
I can't in good conscience really get behind either candidate. And I think it's just really a shame that a large portion of America feels that way. At least that's, you know... It's a very...
It is a large portion. We hear that a lot.
I saw a quote the other day where somebody was saying, listen, I don't think that anybody really loves either one of these candidates, and I think it's
Some
just
people
a,
love a little either one of them way too much, but
yes.
I hear the
point.
Yeah,
there is fanaticism on both sides, but I don't think that the current political discussion that we're having in America is healthy for anybody, and I tried to get into the current election, but the more that I learned about it and the more that I saw it progress, the more I just became a little bit disheartened as things went by. You could say that I'm an idealist, you know, and most people say that cynics are more or less just continuously disappointed idealists. But as far as who I would be voting for, I haven't really figured that out yet because I don't really in my heart believe that either candidate would do the justice to our country that I believe it should be done. So I still like a personal war that I'm kind of figuring out if I feel that either candidate should be really what I believe is what a true American president should be.
Yeah, I think it's difficult for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those things where you have to really break down, as they always say, go to their website. Like, you watch them both in the debates. They say, go to my website, check this out.
The facts, check the facts.
Check out the facts. What are facts anymore? Everything's just getting tossed around on social media. You just don't know what to believe. I think the bottom line is we all know that we're down to these two, and it's nothing's going to change that.
And doesn't it suck, though?
It does suck.
That you have my point on the whole thing is, why do you have to choose left and right or red and blue? Do you really think people are black and white? No, that's what I understand, how people can segregate themselves to I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat. I don't believe everything either one of them wants to do, so why should I choose a side, you know?
Well, the interesting thing is, and I'm not putting America down by any means. I love this country, but in a lot of other countries, European countries, each party can run more than one candidate. You're not really just subject to one party and another party, and those are your two choices.
Like, pick the top five instead of two.
In countries like France, they have maybe six or seven different presidential candidates, and it's kind of more of a free-for-all than it is in this country, where a small portion of the country selects only one candidate per side, and those candidates go at each other on a national debate. But I think really what should be focused on is, a lot of people misunderstand what the role of a president is. Mm-hmm. The president is our president, but Congress makes laws.
Yeah.
And I think really the antidote to a lot of our political problems is people becoming involved, and people becoming involved in the political process and realizing that their voice does have a chance to make a change, and that voting in elections at all levels of government is how to really bring about that change, not just caring about the presidential election when it comes on television and when it comes on Facebook, and when a candidate says something that's outrageous or does something that's outrageous, or we find out that a candidate did something outrageous. Caring about it at all levels of government and making yourself involved in midterm elections, Congress elections, representative elections at the state level, that's really how you bring about change. Not just realizing that the presidential election is around the corner and that Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton did something outrageous.
Exactly. So actually, I want to end it getting back to something that we didn't discuss, the new album, which was out in May of 2016.
Yeah, we put that out in May.
And that was Death of the Marrow?
Depth of the Marrow,
So how was the reception bit on that one?
The reception has been great. I mean, we've been pushing it out online, pushing it out to friends, people coming out. A bunch of people bought it tonight. I think people are loving it. We've done a lot of different things on it. Like, there's a song that I'm on there with our ex-guitarist. It's an acoustic song that we wrote. It's our first studio acoustic song. There's a piano song with me singing on it.
Is it more of a ballad, or did it lead into, like, more heavier?
It's more of a ballad. It's different. It's different for us. And I think people are liking that because it's kind of a change, you know. It's not something we've played out live this year at all, but it's a change. I think people are receiving it well. You know, we got the music video out for our song Loners, and people have shared it. It's got...
Well, definitely a show like this will help sell records.
Oh,
now, what do you use for the, you know, kind of distribution side? Do you use, like, CD Baby or...
What's the site we use?
It's TuneCore. There's TuneCore or CD Baby. It's either
TuneCore.
Like one or the other, you know?
Yeah, we use TuneCore, and basically they push it out to all kinds of different outlets.
Yeah,
you know?
It's on like iTunes. It's on like
iTunes,
the Last
Spotify,
FM. I
Amazon.
Kept seeing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So do you feel like a lot of your sales is in person, like shows like this, or is it on iTunes or streaming? Obviously, streaming is a big thing now, so it's probably that. But
yeah, there's a bunch of streaming. I think it's definitely important for to get in the flesh with people, and mm-hmm. they do come out. And if you put on a great performance, and that's exactly what it is, performance. Don't just go out there and play your music. You have to perform for people. You know, if they appreciate what you're doing and they like the sound, they'll come over and you tell. Like tonight, I said, come over and say hello, and we had a few sales. What's it called? Some people bought the album. As long as they like what they're hearing, they like what you're doing, they're gonna buy it.
And I think a lot of it goes back to what I said earlier about, you know, the music industry is changing. Album sales are important, but album sales as a percentage of overall revenue have been dropping. And I think what is really important, what is an artist's mainstay nowadays is
performance.
Is really the live performance. And as much as we do pride ourselves in what we have accomplished in the studio and the album that we made and the final product that we have to show for it, I think what all of us really love doing and what we pride ourselves even more is our stage performance, our live performance, and that's really why we're down in the studio, you know, between 3 to 5 days a week is really sitting down and I not just me, I think almost every member of this band is what you would consider a perfectionist. We really sit down and try to make and tune and fine-tune pick our live performance out to be as best as it possibly can. And I think that's really what I feel should be when it comes to going and watch a band live. When I go and see a band live, it's not so much them replicating what they have on their album as them putting on a show. And that's really what it is. It's a performance art. We're being paid to go out and do something and perform. And I feel like that should be as fine-tuned as possible.
Now, do you do anything, because like you said, it's the music industry's changing. Do you do anything like DIY for yourselves to kind of promote your band? Do you do like YouTube videos or like instructional videos, anything like you said, streaming? Do you do like Periscope, stuff like that? Now Facebook has, you know, Facebook Live. You plan on doing that?
We actually, I believe, had a live video for a couple of our sets. We played at Dingbats and Clifton a couple
great
months
place,
ago.
Local one. Yeah.
Yep, definitely local. Definitely a place that we've played a lot. And we definitely live streamed a video of our set there. And I know Sean handles a lot of the social media accounts and he's been doing a lot of videos on there.
Yeah, in terms of DIY, it's it becomes, you know, essentially cost effective if you have, you know, luckily we have members in our band that can, you know, like myself, I can do Photoshop work. Mm-hmm. I edit videos. Anthony, guitarist of the band, he does video editing and whatnot. So we can actually go on there and put out regular content for people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important when it comes to DIY, because if you don't have, you know, content for, it's, if you go, when it comes to social media, if you go on there, you look at all these sites, everyone's pushing out daily, it's, you know, photos of themselves.
It's constantly pumping,
constant, and like it's almost like a competition in a news feed to, you know, catch someone's attention, you know.
Yeah, so he retweeted mine and not yours, kind of thing.
So yeah, I like to, and it's fun for me to sit behind a computer and edit photos of us and edit videos, and we like to throw it up on YouTube for people. It's fun.
I mean, nowadays I think YouTube it's television. It's a form of television, right. And it's funny. There's like a smaller group of people out there that supposedly say that they make a living off of just doing their music like that, you know, videos and instruction and package. So, yeah. I mean, I really think nowadays it's a disadvantage because record, you know, people aren't buying records, but
right.
You have an advantage of selling yourself in a different way.
Oh yeah, look, a lot of that's a big discussion in the metal realm is how the industry's changed and what you got to do to get yourself out there. And like I said before about competition, you know, you're mentioning YouTube and whatnot. If it's I don't know.
I mean, yes, the music industry has changed, like you said, but I do think the trade-off is with the introduction of social media, bands now have ways that enable them to do stuff like DIY.
And interact with people.
Right. And now I think the beautiful thing about it is, while yes, records might not be selling the way they used to, we can now, with our own hands, make content and try to distribute it to as many people as we possibly can. In and of ourselves, we don't have to rely on a label for distributing power.
And you can contact a lot of people personally too. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It definitely enables a very intimate kind of relationship with the people who follow us and with our fans. And I think that it's a beautiful thing that we have that at our disposal. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, just like social media is enabling us to do this, it also at some level costs money.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, you definitely have to put money into advertising. Social media advertising is just like advertising in any other form, where you have a product and you want it to reach an audience. You have to be willing to make that, I guess you could say it's an investment. Mm-hmm. You really have to be willing to make that investment and believe in your product and push it. And I think we're at a point where we really do believe that we have a product that is worth pushing, and we're trying to push it on as many levels as we possibly can. But, you know, like Sean was saying, there is a lot of noise. And what you have to do is break through the noise. Just like us, I'm sure there are hundreds of other bands at this level across the nation who are all trying to break through the noise. and you really have to take an aggressive stance and try to push content through all levels of social media in order to break through the noise that are the other hundreds of bands that are trying to do the same thing that you are. Mm-hmm. You know, and hopefully we're able to do that. I know you mentioned that you had saw that one video of us outside Backroom, and that is very reassuring to know that we are able to at least reach people who might not have heard of us before.
Yeah, because if that video reached you, mm-hmm. then we know something we're doing is working.
Exactly. Like the Facebook ads, you know, they came up on my Facebook, and I'm like, oh, it's funny, you know, local band, and now I'm seeing the name everywhere. It's pretty good.
Right.
It's pretty cool to see.
Cool.
And she disappeared, so I guess you have any last questions?
No, I'm good.
No? Cool. All right, so the last thing is we ended the interview with a song of yours. Which any particular one you want to end with? Or
one of our
yeah,
songs?
Yeah, one of your songs. Yeah, we kind of play the song for everyone to end it out. Yeah.
Triggered. We have a song called Trigger Disfigurement.
Trigger Disfigurement. I was going to say any tribute to In Flames, but you got more to the title than just Trigger. So. All right, guys. Well, thanks for being on.
Thank you guys so much. We appreciate
good night.
It.
All right, thanks.